All right, there we go. So just a quick recap from last week. We had started the Gemara on Tesvav Amud Beis, the second side of the 15th page in Maseches Arachin. And we had begun speaking about what is considered to be Lashon Hara. What is the paradigm of Lashon Hara? And so the Gemara there, gave an example where somebody asks, somebody comes to a new town and they ask, David Friedman had translated as bad tongue. Yes, that is true as well. The Gemara earlier in the topic, in the Agadic, in the homiletic portion, does compare it, does talk about the tongue and the part of the body that is used for this sin. So yeah, I guess an even more literal translation would be bad tongue. So the Gemara presents a case where somebody new comes to town and they ask you, where can I find fire? It's late at night, you want fire, and they ask, where can I find it? And you say, it's by so-and-so's house. But you don't just answer their question. Instead, you editorialize. You say, the only place you can find fire at this hour is by so-and-so's house because they've always got a fire running because they're always cooking meat and fish and other delicacies. The Gemara says even something as innocuous as that, where you're not explicitly saying something bad, but you're implying that either they're extremely wealthy or they're gluttonous, even that is considered to be Lashon Hara. The next topic that we discussed, the next section that we discussed last week, was a corollary to Lashon Hara, which was called the Heter of Ape Mara, saying something in the presence of the subject. If you're talking about somebody, according to Rabbah, if you say something bad about somebody to their face, that is not considered Lashon Hara. Now, Abaye and the Gemara asks, that doesn't make any sense. That's so counterintuitive. In addition to it being Lashon Hara, it should also be what's called Onas Dvarim. It should also be verbal abuse, to which Rava seems to clarify his statement in a rather ambiguous way. He says, I hold like Reb Yossi. And Reb Yossi says, in all of my life, I spoke only good things, and I never had to turn around to see if the guy I was talking about was present, implying that if he would be, that would be okay, which again doesn't really answer the question. So we spent the bulk of the class last week discussing different approaches to understanding what that means. The basic approach, we discussed three different opinions. We discussed Rashi, we discussed Tosfos, and we discussed Rabbeinu Yonah. The basic thrust of all of those three opinions is that it doesn't really mean it was Lashon Hara, but rather the fact that you're saying it or would feel comfortable saying it in the presence of the person who you're talking about is a litmus test that what you're saying is not actually Lashon Hara. According to Rashi, if I would feel comfortable saying this in the person's presence, even if it might be somewhat negative, it's obviously not that bad. And so if I know that the other person would feel comfortable with it, that's not considered Lashon Hara. Now, again, we also, to balance that out, we discussed the story in the Gemara where somebody did just that. Three Rabbanim that were learning, and one reported back to his father, something that, again, was not meant to be mean or meant to be Lashon Hara. But nevertheless, the person, this big Talmud Chacham took offense. And so even though Rashi might say that, even if it's a little bit negative, if the person won't mind and it won't cause any harm, it's not Lashon Hara, one does have to be extremely careful. So that is the opinion of Rashi. Tosfos has a little bit more limited of a position. He says, based on the previous case of the fire, that we're talking about a statement that could be interpreted in either a positive or negative light. And the Gemara says, if you want to say something like that, if you want to say a statement that is sort of given the burden of responsibility on the listener to interpret, that it has to be done either in the person's presence, either in the subject's presence, or in the presence of three people where we know it will ultimately get back to the subject, because then that's an indicator that what you're saying is not negative. The third approach, which we talked about, was Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says we actually are talking about something that is overtly bad, but we're talking about a case where it's permitted to speak Lashon Hara. The two classic cases where it is permitted is when it's litoeles, when it's for a constructive purpose. Either it's to save yourself or save somebody else from being harmed, either physically, financially, emotionally. We're talking about a case where it is permitted. A second example, back in the pre-modern world, where the Jewish community lived in enclaves and social pressure was a very genuine constructive force, we're talking about somebody who was a public sinner. And so in order to get them to mend their ways, if you think it would be constructive, and again, you do have to believe it would be constructive, you are allowed to discuss their sins in public if they sinned publicly and are not listening to rebuke. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah says, even though these things are completely permitted, even individually or even not in the person's presence, nevertheless, the halach is that you need to say it either publicly or to the person's face, because if you have a bad intent, then it would still be lashon hara. You need to have a good intent. And the way that you demonstrate that you have a good intent is if you say it in a context that you know that it will ultimately get back to the person and serve whatever constructive purpose you have in mind. Those were the three opinions that we discussed last time. The basic overall common denominator between these three opinions is that what we're saying is not actually lashon hara. And nevertheless, because it's a gray area, the Gemara says that a litmus test is to say it in the presence of the person or to say it in the presence of three people. We're going to finish up this topic now by discussing two more extreme opinions, the Rambam and the Uraim. So I'm going to share the sheet. Give me one moment. There we go. Let's go down. Okay. So this is source number 8 on the bottom is the Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, which I guess literally translated would be the laws of Deia means knowledge. In the Rambam's language, though, knowledge doesn't only mean intellectual knowledge, it also means ethical perfection. So people commonly translate it as character traits or personal improvement. It's not literal, but that's basically what Hilchos Deos talks about. The Rambam says, Echad ha-misafer b'lashon hara b'fnei chaveiro o shelo b'fanav. Somebody who speaks lashon hara, whether in the presence of the person or not in the presence of the person. Ha-misafer dvarim shegormim im nishmu ish mipni ish lahazik chaveiro begufa o b'mamono va'afilu lahatserlo o lahafchido hareze lashon hara. If you say something that causes it ultimately to get back to the person and it causes them physical, financial, even emotional harm, whether it's to pain them or to scare them, that is considered lashon hara. So the Rambam clearly says that you are not allowed to say lashon hara in the presence of the person. And the Rambam doesn't give any of those corollaries of of Rashi or Tosfos or Rabbeinu Yonah. And the implication then is that we don't paskin like Rabba or Rabbi Yossi. Let me just go back up. We can look at the Gemara. I made a flow chart. Let me zoom out a drop. So if you go back to page 3, on the left, you have two columns. On the left-hand side, you have the statements of the Gemara. And on the right-hand side, you have sort of the implied unsaid discussion that's going on in the Gemara. So Rabba says that any statement that is not said in the presence of the subject, that is said in the presence of the subject, is not lashon hara. To which Abaye says that just makes it worse. So Abaye is presumably thinking that according to Rabba, any bad thing that you say in the presence of the person is not lashon hara. Meaning that definitionally, lashon hara is only when the person is not present. And Abaye thinks that's ridiculous. Abaye doesn't think that makes any sense. So now Rabba then answers. Rabba responds and says that he holds like Reb Yossi, who essentially says what he says, that Reb Yossi only said things that he would feel comfortable saying in the presence of the subject. Now, the Gemara never actually says an explanation for why. And even more importantly, the Gemara never actually says whether Abaye agrees or not, because you can really understand the flow of the discussion in one of two ways. One way is to say that Rabba responds to Abaye, listen, Abaye, I agree with you. I'm talking about a specific context where I would feel comfortable saying it in the presence of the person. And so it's not Lashon Hara. And Abaye says, oh, okay, I thought you were talking about general, not a specific case. And so Abaye could potentially agree. The alternative is to say that no, Rabbah is saying, don't look at me. I just hold like Reb Yossi. Reb Yossi is an earlier generation sage. And so I'm going to hang my hat on his position. And Abaye could say, okay, good for you, but no one else holds like that. I don't agree. So the Gemara isn't clear. And this is a machlokes between the Rambam and between everybody else that we've seen up until this point. According to Rashi, Tosvos, Rabbeinu Yonah, even Rabbeinu Gershom, all of the opinions that we saw last week, even though they have different nuances, are essentially saying that Rabba and Abaye ultimately agree. Rabba is saying that Reb Yossi only said his halacha, his corollary, his leniency of saying something in the presence of the person as a litmus test, talking about a specific case where the person won't mind, or it's a open to multiple interpretations, or it's for a constructive purpose. All of those things are specific cases, and so Abaye would actually could conceivably agree. And so all of those Rishonim, all of those commentaries agree with Rabbah. According to the Rambam, though, the way the Rambam understood the Gemara is that no. What Rabbah is saying is that he has this da'as yachid, he has a single opinion that he follows, an earlier generation sage that he holds like. And Abaye says, okay, that's fine. You can say that. You have the authority to say that. But I don't agree. I still think it's ridiculous. And that's how the discussion ends. So Abaye, who might be a later sage than Rabbah, or at least a contemporary, because he doesn't actually explicitly agree to Rabbah, would imply that the halacha follows Abaye. So that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that any bad speech that you say, whether it's in the presence of the person or not in the presence of the person, is forbidden. The only question with that, or the only issue with that, which we have to understand, is according to this version, Rabbah still holds that anything that's said in the presence of the person, no matter how bad or how unequivocally bad it is and how few interpretations there are, I could say the worst thing in the world, and it's not Lashon Hara. Now, again, to put that into context, it still might be forbidden. It still might be usher for other reasons. The Chavetz Chaim has a whole litany of averus that you can transgress, and you would still do those. It could still be onas dvarim. It could still be verbal abuse. It could still be a chol Hashem. It could still be many, many things, but it's not Lashon Hara. So the question is then, well, what's the... One moment, I saw the questions. Give me one moment. So the question is then, what is the position of Rabbah and Rav Yossi? What is the position of that? So somebody asked, isn't Abaye a student of Rav Yosef and usually questions him? I'm honestly not familiar. I don't know the generational thing offhand.
I would say Rabbah or Rava. Who is?
So I've been saying Rabbah. The reason why I've been saying Rabbah is because that is the text that we have in our Gemara. The Rif, Rav Yitzchak, Rav Alfasi, who was one of the earliest North Africans and Spanish Rishonim commentators on the Gemara, he did not write a commentary to Arachin, to this Masechta, because there aren't so many halacha lemaisa things. Instead, he took all of these statements and put them in a different section of the Gemara that talks about Lashon Hara in Maseches Shabbos. Why there specifically, I'm not entirely sure. But if you go to the second parak of Shabbos in the Rif, you'll see a bunch of excerpts from these last two blot about Lashon Hara. There, he has Rava. Nobody else that I've seen, and I've also looked in a couple of manuscript database, no one else has that. Rav Alfasi does. If that's the case, then it is a good chance that the Rambam did as well, because the Rambam is a direct line of Rebbe to student from the Rif. The Rif had a student called the Rimagash. The Rimagash had a student named Rebbe Maimon, who was the Rambam's father and his primary teacher. Interestingly enough, the Kesef Mishnah, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who also wrote a commentary on the Rambam, also had the version of Rava, and therefore he has a problem with why the Rambam paskin like Abaye if we usually paskin like Rava in a debate between Abaye and Rava. I don't want to get into it so much just because there's a lot of technical analysis involved in that. It is a question, you are correct. And so the text might be Rava, it might be Rava.
There's also a couple more parts in the structure that you're taking it. I don't think Abaye speaks to Rava that way. I think he speaks to Rava and Abaye are the contemporaries. Rava is his teacher. Also, Rava, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, makes her das yachid. And so I think that that doesn't help the case. He says, I'm unique. I take a singular opinion. I'm not telling you the real halacha. You're making a good question, but I have an individual opinion. I hold like Rabbi Yossi. He's not really proving his case. He's saying, you're right. I'm just making it like Rabbi Yossi. I'm going to speak about, is that Rabbi Yossi or is that Rabbi Yossi? It's in the text.
It's Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says Rabbi Yossi. Okay.
So he's holding with a minority opinion. He's not trying to, Abaye says, is that worse? Well, I'm taking this minority opinion. I'm taking Rabbi Yossi's opinion.
So I think that's how the Rambam understood the Gemara, meaning the Rambam understood that Rabbi says, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, I hold like a minority opinion. You can say whatever you want, Abaye. And because of that, the implication, according to the Rambam, is that we don't paskin like Rabbi or Rabbi Yossi, we paskin like Abaye. As we'll see, or what we'll see next, is the opinion of the Yireim, who was also another Rishon, who was one of the Baalei Tosfos in Germany. He also had the same understanding of Rabbi and Rav Yossi, but actually paskined like them. So we'll see in a moment how he does it. But I do agree, I think that is the structure, at least according to the way the Rambam understood it. So let's go back now. Let's see the Yireim. The Yireim is source number 9. It is on page 7. So in the second paragraph, he summarizes this Gemara. He says, "V'kaimalan ki Reb Yossi. We paskin like Reb Yossi. D'tanya, Reb Yossi omer, me'olam lo amarti davar v'chazarti la'achorai. I never said anything and had to look behind me to see if the person was there. This is on page 7, it's source number 9. Pirish. So what does that mean? Liros im yavo oso ploni shamarti alav. To see, what that means is to see whether the person I'm talking about is there. Shalo amarti davar, shalo ayisi omer bifnei bailim. Because I would never say anything that I wouldn't feel comfortable saying in their presence. Dahachi kaimalan, dahakam le rava kavase. So how do I know that we paskin like Rav Yossi, he says to the Yireim? We know because Rava paskins like him. Da amar Rava, Beperek Yesh Be'erchin, Lahakel Kalmyosa Demis Amra Ba'ape Tlasa Lespa Mishum Lishnabisha. So now the Gemara, the Yireim does something very interesting. Now again, the Yireim was not a text that was widely published. And so it is a little bit difficult to make sure that we have the correct version. But what the Yireim is saying is that we know that we paskin like Rava, because Rava in the third case, which we also mentioned yesterday, which is anything that's said in the presence of three people is permitted. And the reason why saying something in the presence of three people is permitted is because it will ultimately get back to the original subject. Anytime you say something in front of three people, it means that it has become public knowledge. And it'll spread throughout the entire world, and it will even get back to the original person you're talking about. That was the opinion of Tosfos in general. They link all of these cases together. And so the Yireim does the same thing. So what the Yireim says is from the fact that nobody contests Rava in that third case, nobody contests that. Abaye only had issue in the second stage of the Gemara. In the third stage of the Gemara, when it comes to the corollary of saying it in the presence of three people, no one disputes that. So what the Yireim says is, we see from there that Abaye agreed with Rava. Now again, he had the version of Rava. He had the girsa of Rava, but it's effectively the same thing. He says, from the fact that nobody disputes the third statement of the Gemara is a proof that Abaye ultimately agreed to what Rava was saying. Yes.
real problem with Lashon Hara is once it's attached, you can't bring it back in. There's no way to undo it. You know, to throw feathers to the wind,
right,
try and catch them all, right? That's the most, right? But you can't. So again, if you tell three people, yeah, it's going to get back to the original person. And so it's like you told it to him, but you told three people, it's only going to get back to him because everybody's going to know. So to me, that undermines our whole understanding, modern understanding at least, of what Lashon Hara is. So telling the person directly, maybe that's okay. That might violate other Isurim, like you said, but it may not be Lashon Hara because it's not going to serve the purpose of going out, not being able to be brought back. And he can tell you that's wrong, and he can convince you you're wrong, and you can apologize or whatever, and it hasn't gotten out. So the Uram's position based on Rava, or Rava, whichever one you want to call it, seems to me to be completely untenable from a logical perspective, at least from the way the Chafetz Chaim understands Lashon Hara.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So you're saying that there shouldn't be able to be a logical link from saying it in the presence of three people to ultimately saying it in the presence of the subject, because there's a substantive difference. The difference is that not only does the subject know, but the entire world knows. And that's a problem. That could be conceived as qualitatively worse. And that's true. So I'll ask you to hold on, because the next part of the class, and maybe it'll spill over into next week, will be that last case. So I'll ask you to hold on. I will say, though, that the Chafetz Chaim quotes this Uraim, and he has issues with it. So you...
I read the whole Chafetz Chaim.
Yeah, so you are correct. The Uraim is a Das Yachid, is a singular opinion, and we don't hold like him. And the Chafetz Chaim has a lot of issues with it. But that's what the Chafetz Chaim says. And now he's going to explain Rabbi Yossi. Meaning up until now, he's been just trying to explain how we know the psak, how we know the reason for why we paskin like him. But we don't understand the logic behind it. So in the bolded section, he says, the time of the Rabbi Yossi Svirule, the reason why Rabbi Yossi holds of this opinion, that when you say something bad in the presence of the subject, it's not Lashon Hara, midichsiv. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. And it's interesting, he's the one that comes up with this. I haven't seen anybody earlier say it or in any rabbinic text. Holchei Rachel Nechoshes Ubarzel, that these people, a Rachel, somebody who says Lashon Hara, is like iron and copper, copper and iron. So a Rachel is definitionally somebody who is described as two different metals. Pirush, so what does that mean? She'omer atzmo ohavo v'husono, lomar alav ra'os shelo b'fanav. You're sort of a two-faced personality. So in the olden days, copper was a relatively beautiful metal. It was used to furnish things. It was used as some jewelry. It was used as decorative. It was used as sort of domestic tools, domestic instruments, domestic amenities. Iron, on the other hand, iron was predominantly used for weapons, swords, spears, etc. So when Yirmiyahu describes somebody who says Lashon Hara as copper and iron, the Uraim says you have this dual contradictory personality. When you're speaking to the subject, you have this nice face, you have this friendly face. But when you're not in his presence, when you're not in the person's presence, you're duplicitous, you are iron, you're like a sword, you're stabbing the person in the back. Umashma bishnei inyanim nechoshes ubarzo. And what the Navi is saying is that you have these two different characters. So he says, definitionally, Lashon Hara is something that you don't say in the person's presence. That's another problem. That's another Isser. But a Rachil, a person who says Lashon Hara, is definitionally somebody who says it not in the presence of the person. And what's so bad, as implied from the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, is that you're a two-faced personality. You're betraying the person's trust when they don't have the opportunity to respond. And then he gives another proof from Tanakh, which in my humble opinion is debatable, and I think other people agree as well. And he says, V'nilmod nami mirechilaso shel tziva. We also learn this from the rechilas, the Lashon Hara of tziva. Dichsiv vayiragel ba'avdecha el adoni ha-melech. So just a bit of background. I haven't learned the Sefer Shmuel in a while, so I might be missing some of the details. What had happened is that once David became king, he tried to as an act of kindness, both to Shaul as well as to his best friend, Yonasan. He tried to find people that were still surviving from Shaul's descendants to be their patron, to help them out. And somebody said, listen, most of them have been killed or died out. There's still one left, Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was a descendant of Shaul. I think he was Yonasan's son, if I'm not mistaken. And he was lame. He wasn't able to walk on his own. That's why he was called Mephibosheth. And so he wasn't perceived as a threat, so nobody killed him. And David brought him in, and he was apparently a Talmud Chacham. And David said, listen, I will take care of you. You don't have to worry about any retribution from me or from my army or from anybody else. I'll take care of you. You can live in the palace. You can live in Yerushalayim. Things went well until Avshalom, one of David's sons, staged a rebellion, and David was forced to flee. So David and all of his people that were loyal to him ran away. Mephibosheth didn't come. Mephibosheth's slave, Siva, hurried after David, and he was carrying a lot of provisions, and he said, these are for you, I'm joining you. So David asked, well, what happened to Mephibosheth? So Tziva said that Mephibosheth has decided to side with Avshalom. He says that Hashem is punishing David, and ultimately the kingdom will revert back to him. So David was understandably very angry at this betrayal, and so he said all of Mephibosheth's assets will now go to Tziva. He was the king. He was allowed to do that. Ultimately, when the rebellion was quashed and David returned to Yerushalayim, Mephibosheth came back to David and he said, I'm sorry I wasn't able to follow you. I wanted to, but I can't walk on my own. And when I was about to leave, I found out that my servant Tziva had left already. And he said, Tziva spoke Lashon Hara about me. I wanted to follow you. He decided to lie. He decided to essentially try to take all of my stuff. And so he left without me and presented me as this traitor. And so David accepted that and he made some compromise. The Gemara, however, calls this rechilus. And the Navi itself says that Siva acted as a rachil. So the Urayim says, in that case, Mephibosheth wasn't there. That was the whole point. That was how Siva was able to do that. So he says, "V'yilmot sasum min ha-mefarash." So he understands, the Urayim says that because that case serves as a paradigm of rechilus, he called that rechilus, implying that other cases would not be rechilus. So therefore, another proof is that rechilus is definitionally something that is only in the presence of the, only not in the presence of the person. Now again, you could debate that. You could contest that. You could say, okay, that's Lashon Hara, and there's also another case of Lashon Hara. But that is, regardless, that is the pshat of the Urayim. So the Urayim, and the Urayim Paskins like that. So the Urayim says that Lashon Hara is something that is definitionally not in the presence of the other person because you're stabbing them in the back. It's still a little bit difficult to understand. And the Maharal, which we'll see next, offers a much more embellished explanation. But before we do that, I want to highlight one point, which is what comes out from the Urayim is that a large part of the focus of Lashon Hara is not on the content of your speech. It obviously has to be bad, but the real evil is not the content, but the fashion in which you're doing it. The fashion in which you're doing it, this two-faced type of relationship that you have with somebody and this act of betrayal, that's the evil of Lashon Hara. It's obviously bad what you're doing and how you're hurting the person, but the dynamic is what makes Lashon Hara unique. And the Maharal embellishes this much, much more. So let's see the Maharal. The Maharal, amongst his many other svarim, wrote a Musar Sefer called Nesivos Olam. It means the paths of the world. And one of those sections is called Nesiv HaLashon, which talks about Lashon Hara. And he quotes this Gemara, and he doesn't quote the Urayim, but he explains the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. So on page 8, he says, "Ki ein lashon hara ka'asher ha'adam yesh lo meriva uktata im acherim." So he says, you have to realize there is a premise that we have that a physical altercation or an argument with somebody else is not lashon hara. If I just start arguing with somebody, that's not Lashon Hara, that's just fighting. Why? Why is that not considered to be Lashon Hara? She'ein ze nitle b'lashon, because such a dynamic is not contingent on the tongue, it is not contingent on speech. She'ka'asher hu lefanav, yachol lahakoso, lahakososo ulahargo. So he takes it to the extreme, that when you're in the person's presence, you can physically respond. You could hit them, you could kill them. Vigam ka'asher hu lifnei chaveiro, az hu yachol la'amod kinegdo ulahashiv al dvarav. And dialing it down, you're also able to verbally respond to the other person. If somebody verbally attacks you, if you're there, you're able to verbally respond back. V'kevan sheyachol la'ashiv al dvarav, v'yachol la'amod kinegdo. So since the person is able to defend themselves, either verbally or physically, ein ze kol kach ra, she'yeh nikra lashon hara. It's not that bad to be considered lashon hara. V'yoser av, and even more so, af im lo haye befanav. Even if he wasn't actually in the presence of the other person, rak she'im haya befanav, oso she'omrim alav lashon hara lo haye makpid ha'omer, v'gam lefanav haya omer, ein ze lashon hara. And moreover, if you would say something not in the person's presence that you would feel comfortable saying if they were there, that's also not Lashon Hara. Why? Kevan she'im haya bifanav, lo haya ze Lashon Hara. Since if he would be there, it wouldn't be considered Lashon Hara. V'hu eno midakdek baze lo mar shelo bifanav, ein ze Lashon Hara ba'atzmo. Since technically this is something that you could say in their presence, and if you would say it in their presence, it's not Lashon Hara, even if they're not there, definitionally this is not Lashon Hara. Why? The tongue or the speech itself has to be Lashon Hara, meaning not just the context, but the actual speech itself needs to be termed Lashon Hara. So definitionally, what you're saying is not Lashon Hara if you could say it in their presence, because that's not Lashon Hara. Rak in medaktek shalola mar befanav. It's only an issue if you wouldn't feel comfortable saying it in their presence. Rak shalol befanav davar zet tole belashon. That speech is contingent on the tongue. Dafka. V'hu shenikra lashon hara dafka belashon. And that's why lashon hara is called lashon hara. Bad tongue or bad speech, not bad words. So the Maral is very ambiguous. The Chafetz Chaim says that he has no idea what the Maral is talking about. He thinks that there are midrashim that contradict what the Maral is saying. But if I could explain it a little bit, I'm not an expert on secular philosophy, but there's a concept that's spread throughout the Maral's thought that in Hebrew it's called muchrach, something that is unconditional. That something whose existence is conditional on something else is lacking a certain sense of completeness, lacking a certain sense of identity. That's why, for example, God is the most real entity in the world, because God's existence is not conditional on anything else. So according to the Maharal says that if speech is conditional, meaning I wouldn't need to say this if I was in the person's presence, or if I would be able to say it in the person's presence, then the fact that I'm not gives this speech less of a definition or existence of speech. It's a very weird concept, but that's what the Maharal says. Now, what the Maharal means is that when the Torah says Lashon Hara is forbidden, what that means is that not the words that you're saying is the problem. Right? Because if you would be arguing in the presence of the person, Rabbi Yossi says that wouldn't be Lashon Hara. That would just be getting into a fight. Like if you see in the picture that these two people are arguing, they're essentially fighting physically with their tongues. You see these like fingers that are banging into each other and pointing at each other. That's how the Maharal conceives of saying bad stuff in the person's presence. That's not called speech. That's just called fighting with your words. And the person's able to defend themselves. What the Torah means when it says Lashon Hara is that you say something that is completely conditional on the tongue, meaning that if you would be in the person's presence, or feel comfortable saying it in the person's presence, those aren't words. That's fighting with your tongue. That's fighting with them. Words are by definition something that you use to inspire or to impact from a distance. It's something where you can expand your influence beyond where you physically are. That's why the ultimate form of creation, this is a little bit more esoteric, but the ultimate form of creation is through words. That's why the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that God created the world with 10 utterances. God didn't create the world, obviously it's all anthropomorphic anyway, or metaphorical anyway, but it doesn't say that God created the world with his hands. It says that God spoke. Because when you use your hands to build something, you're limited. You're limited by the reach of your hands. You're limited by the dexterity of your hands. But when you say something, the only limitations that are in place are the ones that you have in mind. I can say whatever I want. Now, it might be limited as to how to create that vision. Like I can say I want a house with 10 stories and I want an in-ground pool. But if I don't have the money or the materials, it's not going to get built. But God is infinite. So the best way to create something is by speaking it. And because God is infinite, God's speech becomes real. So in a much lower sense, though, we are like that too. Humanity's power to influence our environment physically with our hands is limited. It's limited by our strength, and it's limited by our range, our physical range of where we can go. Words, the Maharal says, can spread out and impact in a much larger way, both qualitatively and quantitatively. With a single comment, I can impact somebody around the world. If I post something online, on social media, or send an email or a WhatsApp text, I can impact somebody around the world. I can impact a large group of people around the world. And the type of impact that I can have is qualitatively much greater. I can hurt a person physically, emotionally, psychologically, perhaps even greater than just if I get into an argument with them. The second element that the Maharal says is the fact that the other person is vulnerable. When the person isn't there, they're not able to respond. They're not able to defend themselves. So once again, your power is exponentially greater. And it's not just an amount, it's qualitatively different and much, much worse if you're not in their presence. So yes, the Maharal says that saying bad things in the presence of a person is forbidden. It might be verbal abuse. It might be sinas chinam. It might be baseless hatred. It might be chilul Hashem. It might be a lot of things, but it's not lashon hara. Lashon hara is the corruption of the power of speech. As the Yireim says, you're stabbing the person in the back, or the way the Maharal puts it, you're basically corrupting the long-range influence that you're able to have. Anything that you say in the presence of the person is much more physical. It's much more concrete. It's less pervasive. Yes.
He's also saying only when the speaker is afraid to say it in the presence of the subject. Well, that's very personal. The cartoon you showed us, I'm not afraid to say you stinkhead to your face. So in my opinion, it's not lashon hara. If you're the kind of person who wouldn't want to say it in front of you, then it is lashon hara. So it's a very personal definition. There are kinds of people who are not afraid to say you stinkhead in my presence. So for him, it's not lashon hara. There are people who would be afraid to say it in my presence. So for that person, it is lashon hara. So the cartoon showed a guy who had no issue with saying it to his face. So for that guy, it's not lashon hara. That's what that comic was referring to, that you've made a very personal decision. What's lashon hara?
Yeah, so that is true. The Maharal doesn't address that part of it, that there is a certain subjectivity to it, that I might feel comfortable even though it might be hurtful to the other person. The implication is that the prohibition of lashon hara would theoretically be subjective. It would still be forbidden in either case, but yes, there would be a certain relative is a better way of putting it. There might be a certain relativeness to something that might be forbidden for me to say because of lashon hara might just be forbidden because of verbal abuse for somebody else. That is a very good point. So that's what the Maharal says. And again, most people don't paskin like this. Most people don't hold of this. Most people hold of Rashi, Tosfos, and Rabbeinu Yonah. But this position of the Yireim, and according to the Rambam, the position of Rabbi Yossi, at least to me, highlights the uniqueness of Lashon Hara. Because again, Lashon Hara is kind of weird. There are many, many other prohibitions that deal with improper speech. You're not allowed to lie. You're not allowed to verbally abuse somebody. And you're not allowed to cause damage, like physical, emotional, or psychological, or financial damage because of your speech. Those are all forbidden under other categories of sins. So what is Lashon Hara seems to be redundant. And so according to this idea, the real insidiousness of Lashon Hara is less the fact of the content of what you're saying, but the broader context of what you're doing. According to the Yireim, you're stabbing the person in the back. It's the betrayal in a time when they are vulnerable and can't respond. According to the Maharal, you're corrupting the primary way that humanity can interact with its world in a large scale. Essentially, you're taking down the mechanism that holds society together. Society grows because of communication, globalization, and the ability to communicate from one part of the world to another has essentially shrunk the world and joined us together. According to the Maharal, the problem of Lashon Hara is that you're corrupting that power of communication. And once that happens, as we'll see, society begins to break down. So we don't have time to go through the whole thing. I just copied a little piece of it. Just honestly, the title is what I wanted to highlight. If you turn the page to page 9, you'll see the section of Chorev that talks about Lashon Hara and Rechilas. So Chorev was written by Rav Hirsch. It was written in German, I believe. And it was translated by, at least this edition, was translated by Rabbi Dr. Diane Grunfeld, who was a lawyer by trade, but ultimately became a dayan and rabbi in England. And he translated Chorev into English. So I don't know whose choice this was. I'm not an expert in, I don't know German, so I don't know if this was Rav Hirsch or Diane Grunfeld's decision. But the way they translated Lashon Hara and Rechilas, they put a positive spin on it. They didn't translate it in the negative way. They put it in the positive way, is honor and peace. Now, Lashon Hara, Diane Grunfeld and Rav Hirsch say, is the opposite of honor. You're not hurting the person. You're tarnishing their honor. It's a much more abstract concept, and also it's a much more interpersonal concept. If you just look at the first sentence, the image of a person as it appears in others' minds is called his honor. What that means is that honor is something that doesn't have inherent worth. If no one's around to honor me, the argument could be made that I'm not honorable. If there's nobody to honor me, I can't honor myself. So honor is something that is completely contingent and is subject to the appraisal of everybody around you. So what Rav Hirsch says is that when you say Lashon Hara, it could be that you're physically hurting the person. It could be that you financially hurt the person. It could be that you psychologically hurt the person. But the essence of the insidiousness of Lashon Hara is that you're breaking down their honor. You're breaking down their worth in the eyes of other people, not their inherent worth, but you're breaking down the subjective or the interpersonal worth that you have in the eyes of other people. So it's a different take than the Yireim and the Maharal. But what Rav Hirsch also highlights is that it's not necessarily the words that you're saying, that you're not hurting the person. You're hurting their abstract relative worth in society. And that's what's unique about Lashon Hara. The evil of Lashon Hara is that it's not about the actual person you're talking about in the very limited sense. It's their place in society that you have betrayed and destroyed. And that's the evil of Lashon Hara. So with that, we've come to the end of the first section. Just to summarize, we have 5 opinions about whether you're allowed to say Lashon Hara in the presence of the subject. The, I guess, middle of the road opinions, which is what we've paskin like, what we hold like, are Tosfos, Rashi, and Rabbeinu Yonah, who all say that you're not really allowed to say anything bad in the presence of the other person. If you actually say something that's bad, that's Lashon Hara. This heter, this leniency, is talking about cases where it could go either way, and saying it in the presence of the person or in a, or if you're comfortable that you would have said it in the presence of the person, that's a litmus test that it's permitted. According to the Rambam and the Urayim, Rabba actually holds that definitionally it's not Lashon Hara if you would feel comfortable saying it in their presence. The Urayim says we paskin like that, and the Rambam says, no, we don't, because that's ridiculous. So just to summarize, the Magen Avram, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about Lashon Hara, but the Magen Avram does add in parts when it comes to the halachos of doing business with people. He adds in the halachos of Lashon Hara. He says because oftentimes people have the potential to say Lashon Hara during business deals. And he says that we paskin like Tosfos and Rabbeinu Yonah. We do not paskin like the Rambam and the Urayim. Okay, that's the end of that topic. We have about 15 minutes left, so I want to start the next topic. The next topic is one with a lot more, I would say, practical ramifications. And that is Lashon Hara in the public domain, especially in the information age of being able to post things, not even letters, but just the ability to post things on the internet and how information is stored. Once you put something on the internet, it can never go away. It might be hard to find, but it can never go away. And so what we're going to talk about now is the halacha of ape telasa, of saying something in the presence of three people. So let's go back to the Gemara. The Gemara on the first page, the last part, the last box on the first page, Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna. So Rabba Bar Rav Huna said, Kol milsa de misamra ba'ape tlasa, lesba mishum lishnabisha. Anything that was said in the presence of three people does not have the status of Lashon Hara. My time, what's the reason? Chavrach chavra islay, v'chavra dechavrach chavra islay. The reason is that your friend who you told it to has a friend, and that friend also has a friend. What that means is that when you say something in the presence of three people, it will just inevitably spread like a virus. It will just spread throughout the world. This Gemara is not the only place that mentions this halacha. This halacha is also used in Bava Basra, in the topic of, in the parak of Cheskas Habatim. That Gemara talks about having claims on land or squatter's rights. Just to give a brief overview, the halacha is that if I own something, if I have a, I don't know, for example, I have a mouse over here. So if I'm holding this mouse and somebody says, that's my mouse, I can say, no, it's not, I'm holding it. And that's enough. That's enough proof to show ownership. I don't need like a notarized document. All I need is to the ability to hold this. And when it's under my control, it's assumed to be mine. Let's make it a little bit more complicated. If the person is somehow able to prove that they were once the owner of it, and I have it in my hand, when it comes to a physical object that I can hold, I'm still considered to be the owner. As long as I say, yes, you were the owner, but I bought it from you, or I bought it from somebody else who bought it from you, that is a proper response. That is an acceptable response to explain the fact that that person has proof that it was his, and now it's mine. Land, however, is different. Land, for various cultural and sociological reasons, you need to hold on to your contract or your deed of that entitling you to this piece of property for 3 years. 3 years is the I guess, time that is considered to be appropriate enough to give the original owner time to protest. If you're squatting on their property, they have a time period of 3 years to basically complain against you, take you to court, or just publicize that you're living there illegally. And they have to respond by producing their document that shows that they own the land. After 3 years, they are not expected to hold on to their deed, to their contract saying that they own the land. It is just assumed that if the original owner didn't protest after 3 years, that's proof enough that even if it was yours, you gave it to him. You were mochel it. So the question that the Gemara deals with then is, well, how do I protest? How many people do I need to protest? If I just say it in my house and nobody's around, that's not a valid macha. That's not a valid protest that that the other person is living there illegally. So the Gemara has a machlokas. And one of the sides is that you have to say this protest. You have to basically say that this person is living there illegally in the presence of three people. How do I know that you have to say it in the presence of three people? Because of our Gemara over here. Our Gemara says Lashon Hara is not an issue when there's three people, because when you say it in front of three people, it'll ultimately spread throughout the entire world. So that's what the Gemara says. It's still a very problematic Gemara, because Alan, like you said, if I say it in front of many people, it should be even worse. So why should it be permitted to say it in front of everybody?
Does it say permitted, yes, or does it say that it's not Lashon Hara? I mean, it's not Shtatnez. There are a lot of things it isn't, but it does mean that it's permitted. You're saying something that's very not nice. You said in front of three people, so it's not permitted. It's just not considered Lashon Hara.
Okay, good. So that is one potential explanation. One potential explanation is to say, like what we've been saying up until this point, that just like saying something in the presence of the person might not definitionally be Lashon Hara, but is still usher for other reasons, the same thing might be true because of Lashon Hara. That definitionally, Lashon Hara is not saying it in the public domain. It's saying it as like a secret. Maybe it's like the Pasuk in Vayikra says that you're like a peddler. So it could be that a peddler goes from like one person to another. Let me just go back down. Give me 1 second over here. If you go to page 11, so on the right, you can see a Norman Rockwell picture called The Gossipers. And so gossip is essentially one person talking to another. If I just say something in the town square, that might not be considered gossip. That might just be I'm a blowhard, or I just like to talk, or I like to insult people. But that's not gossip. So that could be. That is certainly a valid interpretation. Maybe that's what one of the Rishonim will say, as we'll see. There are, however, other opinions. And it really hinges on a question on the sugya, which I left intentionally ambiguous, which is, it says that this speech is not Lashon Hara, but it doesn't explicitly say at what stage of the conversation it's not Lashon Hara. Is it referring to the initial speaker in front of three people, or is it referring to those three people if they repeat it to other people? As we'll see, that is a machlokas. So with that in mind, we have about 5 minutes, so we'll start. So the first opinion on page 11 is the Rashbam. The Rashbam was Rashi's grandson. So he, in Bava Basra, he says, "Dekol milsa da avida liigluye lesba mishum lishnebisha." Anything that will ultimately be revealed is not considered to be Lashon Hara. And then he says, "Dekevan." The Yada'i Shlosha, since three people know, Ki'ilu Kol Ha'olam Yodin. It is as if the entire world knows. So I wasn't able to get it on this page just because of formatting issues. But the Rashbam continues and elaborates that we're not actually talking about the initial person. We're not talking about speaker zero, to use an epidemic type of term. We're not talking about the first person. We're talking about those three people and subsequent ones, potentially. Because the first person may have been forbidden to say it. They might not have been allowed to say it. That might have been Lashon Hara. But if it's spread already, if it's entered the public domain, then I'm not adding anything bad. I'm not doing anything worse. It's already spread. So the fact that I'm simply carrying out the inevitable, I shouldn't be punished for that. Now, that's a little bit hard to understand because, I don't know, let's say you have a car and it's on, let's say somebody has a car and they leave it unlocked in a bad neighborhood. And then somebody comes and steals it and gets caught. And when they defend themselves in front of the judge, they say, listen, it was going to get stolen anyway. So I was the one that decided to carry it out. So I shouldn't be held responsible. The judge would say, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. You were the one that did it. It wasn't stolen yet. And now you stole it. So too over here, the Chafetz Chaim and basically everybody else asks that according to this position, that we're saying that the first person is not allowed to say it. Once they said it, you can now repeat it. But it hasn't become public knowledge yet. It's just three people. So granted, it might inevitably become that. But who cares? It hasn't become public yet, so it should still be prohibited. It should still be forbidden. Now, as we'll see, the Rambam may answer that question. The Rashba, by adding a qualification. The Rashbam, however, does not offer any qualifications. What the Rashbam seems to imply is that, like we said, definitionally, Lashon Hara is only considered to be Lashon Hara when it's not in the public domain. When I say it in front of three people, it is considered to already be in the public domain. That's what he says. He says, when three people know, it's as if the entire world knows. And so if everybody knows, like, let's say I want to talk about how bad of a person Bernie Madoff was, right? At least in our community, in America, almost everybody knows who Bernie Madoff is. So there's no Lashon Hara, according to this, of me talking about what Bernie Madoff did, because I'm not substantively adding anything since it's already in the public domain. What the Rashbam is saying is that definitionally, once we say it in the presence of three people, halacha views it already as if it's in the public domain, which is a chiddush. It is a novel interpretation. That's what the Rashbam says. The Rambam, however, he says something similar, but adds a very important qualification. So with this, we'll close. I just want to read the Rambam, and then next week we'll study the Rambam because this Rambam, this part of the Rambam, we do paskin like, and it has numerous ramifications for newspapers, for posting on the internet, and just for conversations. And also in Israel, there's been a lot of discussion about when you have religious people in the government, political campaigns, tons and tons of ramifications about this. So let's take a look at the Rambam, the bolded part. If you say, if something is said in the presence of three people, kvar nishmar hadavar v'noda, the matter has already been spoken and heard and known. So up until that point, the Rambam seems to say exactly what the Rashbam says, that once you say it in the presence of three people, it's entered the public domain. And so if one of those three people decides to repeat it, that's not Lashon Hara. But then the Rambam adds in a qualification. That the person cannot have in mind to spread the information any further. So that's a little hard to understand. What does that mean? Obviously, when you say something, you have in mind to spread it. So what the Kesef Mishnah, what the Rav Yosef Karo understands it to mean is that you're allowed to say it as part of a normal conversation, but you can't decide to spread it any further. That is a very difficult opinion to understand. It might address everybody's question on the Rashbam, that how can you say, oh, just because it'll happen, therefore it's okay. You're still not allowed to do it. So the Rambam says, no, your intention matters. You can't spread it further. But if you can't spread it further, then it hasn't entered the public domain yet. So why should I even be allowed to say it as part of a normal conversation? Why am I allowed to say it over dinner or over like a Shabbos lunch or a Shabbos dinner with another family and not be allowed to post it online or start spreading it over a chat? Or something like that. Why should there be a difference And we're going to discuss next week multiple approaches to this, and there will be a lot of significant differences with many practical ramifications. So with that, we'll close for this week, and looking forward to seeing you next week. If anybody has any questions, feel free to unmute or use the chat. All right. So God willing, see you all next week. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.